Welcome to VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up in our program, pro-democracy protesters vow to keep up pressure in Hong Kong. It's Monday, July 15th. This is VOA Asia. You'll also find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, New Zealand collects firearms, the business of Afghan snake venom, asylum seekers caught in a political struggle, fighting obesity through surgery, and escaping to rooms. It's all on today's VOA Asia. As Hong Kong's pro-democracy protesters vow to keep up their fight, churches remain on the front lines. Christian groups hold regular public gatherings and sing hymns at demonstrations, both as a way to protest and to de-escalate clashes between police and more aggressive protesters. We hear more from VOA's Bill Gallo as many churches in Hong Kong fear a crackdown on religion as China expands its influence.
Part worship service, part protest. Christians in Hong Kong marching to government headquarters, pushing back on what they see as eroding freedoms.
We don't know how the situation tomorrow, actually. Because one country, two system, for many people in Hong Kong, is vanished. No such system is failed.
Christians make up 11% of Hong Kong's population. And though recent pro-democracy protests weren't primarily religious, Christians have played a big role. Religious songs like this one have become subversive protest anthems, in part because religious gatherings aren't as tightly regulated.
If the movement are organized in pure religious affair, no law can be bound to these actions. Yeah. We don't need to get permit from the police.
Though Hong Kong still enjoys religious freedom, many Christians here feel they have the most to lose as Beijing moves in. In the mainland, China's Communist Party has cracked down on unauthorized religious groups. Churches torn down, congregations evicted, and internment camps hold around a million Muslims. Add it all up, and Hong Kong Christians are right to worry, says Human Rights Watch.
We've seen the agenda of Xi Jinping and Beijing. They're trying to reel Hong Kong in, and eventually they're going to gut the territory's civil and political liberties, independent institutions, and ultimately democracy. You can really bet your last dollar that the outspoken parishes and independent religious leaders are on Beijing's list to either be controlled or destroyed in Hong Kong.
This religious NGO says some Christian schools are under pressure to phase out religious classes, and that it's getting harder to hold public events.
We have to buy the public insurance, the third-party insurance. So when some of the private insurance company refuse to do business with you because they don't want to destroy the relationship with the Hong Kong government or Chinese government.
China doesn't fully take over Hong Kong until 2047, but many Christians feel they don't have 28 years.
So when you ask me about 2047, it's really very long. We don't even know what will happen in the next month.
Though many churches in Hong Kong choose not to be political, others feel they have no choice.
We use water, warm water, to boil a flock. Actually, it's boiled now.
This group has already held these marches for several weeks and has no plans to quit. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Hong Kong.
Meanwhile, Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen made a quick visit to Haiti on Saturday, during which she expressed her hopes for peace and stability in the Caribbean country. During the four-hour stop, which included the official opening of a Taiwanese product expo and a visit to the National Museum, the Taiwanese later made no new announcements, but rather reiterated her country's support for Haitian President Moisi and the bilateral projects already in place. Taiwan's leader, who arrived in Port-au-Prince with a delegation of officials including three parliament members, the president of the Private Business Sector Association, and Taiwanese entrepreneurs, said she hoped the two countries would be able to cooperate in new areas in the future. The two leaders, who have both recently experienced massive protests demanding they resign, met for about 20 minutes and then held a joint press conference at the National Palace. Moisey said there were five prospective areas where Taiwan and Haiti could cooperate in the future, including infrastructure for roads, agriculture, mass transport, affordable housing, and a port in the northwest. Haiti is the first stop on Tsai's 12-day tour, which began July 11th and includes visits to four countries. Taiwan is looking to boost ties with Caribbean allies at a time when China is making inroads in the region. The Dominican Republic, which broke off ties with Taiwan in 2018 in favor of China, has been offered $3 billion in loans from Xi Jinping's government, according to reports. Meanwhile, Taipei's $150 million loan to Haiti for electrical projects has not been disbursed because the Haitian parliament has not yet approved it. Tsai's next stop is St. Kitts and Nevis, where she landed late Saturday for a four-day visit, the first ever by a Taiwanese president, and she will also visit St. Vincent and the Grenadines and St. Lucia. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com online. Hong Kong anti-extradition protesters fire up fight in the suburbs. Major quakes strike Indonesia and Australia. High-level defector suggests North Korea employs state-sponsored schemes to elude sanctions. Another Canadian detained in China amid diplomatic chill. Hong Kong protests erupt near China's mainland border. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia. And of course, your destination can always be the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. New Zealand has held its first public firearms collection event in Christchurch. It happened Saturday as part of the government's response to the city's mosque shootings back in March. Ownership of the types of high-powered weapons used in the attacks that killed 51 people has been restricted. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
There were long lines at a racecourse in Christchurch as gun owners waited to hand in weapons that are now illegal. It's the first of more than 250 buyback events that will be held across New Zealand. The police expect that tens of thousands of guns will be surrendered, although the exact number is unknown. Semi-automatic weapons were outlawed following attacks on two mosques in Christchurch that left 51 people dead. The government said the law would remove the most dangerous guns from the community. Chris Cahill from the New Zealand Police Association, which represents officers, believes the buyback scheme will go smoothly.
We know the vast majority of firearms owners are law-abiding citizens. While disappointed to have to lose these sorts of firearms, they understand why and they want to abide by the law.
More than $130 million has been set aside to compensate owners of semi-automatic weapons. The amount each individual will receive will depend on the value and condition of their guns. But some owners are complaining that the compensation is inadequate. There are concerns, too, that farming communities which rely on firearms for hunting and pest control will suffer because of the ban on military-style semi-automatic weapons. Nicole McKee is a spokesperson for New Zealand's Council of Licensed Firearms Owners.
We are a rural and farming community here at the bottom of the world, and we use firearms as a tool, and there's quite a few of us that hunt as well to put food on the table.
New Zealand authorities hope the scheme will be as successful as one in Australia that was implemented after the Port Arthur massacre in 1996 on the island of Tasmania, where a lone gunman murdered 35 people. It prompted more than 700,000 weapons to be surrendered. The Australian man accused of the Christchurch shootings has denied 51 charges of murder, 40 counts of attempted murder, and a terrorism charge. He's expected to go on trial next year. The gun collection event in Christchurch will continue Sunday. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, the U.S. Geological Survey says an earthquake with a magnitude of 7.3 struck eastern Indonesia, while earlier Sunday a 6.6 magnitude earthquake rattled west of the Australian beach resort of Broome. There were no immediate reports of damages or casualties from either quake. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Glad you're with us today as we begin a brand new week on VOA Asia. Extracting venom from snakes, scorpions, and other venomous animals has become a lucrative business for some. The number of companies producing venom for antidotes has dropped as the demand has risen, according to market research groups. Two businessmen in Herat, Afghanistan, have opened a venom extraction laboratory and are tapping into the market in a nation that is home to 27 species of snakes and an unknown number of scorpion species. Khalil Noorzai has more in this report, narrated by Bejan Hamdard.
The venom from snakes and scorpions can be used to great medical advantage. The venom from snakes and scorpions can be devastating, even deadly to humans. But medical experts say the same properties that make the venom harmful can be used to produce life-saving medicines and treatments.
Venom potential is huge. We have calculated that in snake venom, or precisely in scorpion venom, we can find a few hundred unknown different toxins. We only know 1 or 2% of them. There are about 2,000 different species of scorpions. If you multiply these 2,000 species by hundreds of toxins, you will get millions of substances to analyze and to study. This is a huge potential.
The venom toxins are used to make anti-venom, which medical experts say is the only antidote for serious poisonous snake and scorpion bites. But the demand for venom getting higher and the supplies getting lower and lower, say market research groups. In Afghanistan, two businessmen are trying to tap into this industry by building a facility specifically to extract venom. The co-owners say a kilogram of snake venom sells for over $1 million on the market.
We noticed in different districts that snakes and scorpions were being smuggled outside Afghanistan. So we decided to open this farm to prevent the smuggling and also produce a very high quality venom because the quality of the venom in Afghanistan is superior.
In the last 6 months, we produced between 400 to 600 grams of venoms. We hope the Afghan government will help us to reach international markets.
Azizi and Darwish say Afghanistan's terrain and weather makes it an ideal location for snakes and scorpions and their venom extraction business. And there appears to be plenty of need for the venom. According to the World Health Organization, more than 5 million people are bitten by snakes each year, about 2 million of them by poisonous snakes. For Khalil Noorzai in Herat, Afghanistan, Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Coming up, migrants come against a political border wall. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news from VOA Asia. A Canadian citizen has reportedly been detained in Yantai, China. Global Affairs Canada did not provide details about the identity of the detainee. Relations between China and Canada chilled in December when the CEO of the Chinese tech giant Huawei was arrested in Vancouver on a U.S. warrant. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for this and much more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, congressional Democrats are pushing for new protections for asylum seekers at the U.S.-Mexico border. They unveiled legislation that reflects the lawmakers' increasing anger and concern over the Trump administration's immigration policies, but Republicans accuse Democrats of refusing to acknowledge an immigration crisis exists and making the problem worse. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more from Capitol Hill.
Ahead of expected federal raids targeting undocumented immigrants Sunday, anger.
This is not a partisan issue. I think it's being leveraged in a partisan way. This is a humanitarian effort that should cut across any kind of politics.
But immigration is always a partisan issue on Capitol Hill, sparking strong feelings as Democrats confronted President Trump.
Let's call his raids what they really are. They're family separation raids. And what will happen to these family members? Where are they going to be sent once they're ripped away from their children? They're going to be sent into DHS custody, where even their own watchdog has documented countless stories of human rights violations and abuses.
Border facilities are not set up to handle long-term detentions, an inspector told Congress.
Border Patrol requires immediate assistance to manage the overcrowding in its facilities.
Democrats who recently visited those facilities described asylum seekers in filthy conditions.
There is no need for us to do this. There's no need for us to overcrowd and to detain and under-resource. There is no need for us to arrest innocent people and treat them no differently than criminals when they are pursuing their basic human rights.
Ocasio-Cortez is one of several new Democrats accusing House Speaker Nancy Pelosi of failing to rein in the Trump administration. Pelosi unveiled new legislation this week addressing some of their concerns.
It's never too late to do the right thing for the children. And when it comes to children, again, I'm the lioness. I'm just going to protect our cubs. And so we're going to use every legislative tactic at our disposal.
But that legislation, strengthening congressional oversight of the Trump administration's immigration policies, will not pass the Republican-controlled U.S. Senate. The president's party says the problem is a lack of funds.
Our current border facilities are not designed to handle these current numbers. Border Patrol and ICE are doing the best they can with extremely limited resources that we have given them. They understand they don't have the tools and resources they need to even begin thinking about mitigating the influence cartels have in our nation, because Border Patrol is undermanned and underfunded, and Congress has done nothing to help.
Democrats are reluctant to increase funding to the agencies they say are the problem. Political compromise is unlikely.
We got to hold these people, everyone accountable in the legislature, in the Senate, in Congress. Everyone is being held accountable. This is criminal.
Public pressure not enough to break a Capitol Hill impasse. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
This news from VOA Asia. Taiwan is defending a proposal to purchase $2.2 billion in arms from the United States following a Chinese announcement it would sanction any American companies involved in the deal. Taiwan's defense ministry says U.S. weapons help strengthen Taiwan's self-defense in the face of a growing military threat from China. Defend your freedom online by visiting VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, bariatric surgery shrinks the stomach so people battling obesity can lose weight and regain their health. It's a drastic, life-changing procedure, but as VOA's Carol Pearson reports, some doctors think it should be done more often before patients become severely obese.
Sean Rogers struggled for more than 20 years to manage his weight, even as his diabetes kept getting worse.
By just dieting and continuing the cycle with the insulin, I was never going to lose the amount of weight I needed to lose to change the whole cycle and get the diabetes in really good control.
Insulin can make people feel hungry, making it even harder to lose weight. Yet resorting to bariatric surgery is expensive. In the U.S., health insurance companies won't pay for the procedure unless a patient's body mass index, or BMI, is at least 35. Even if a patient's diabetes is uncontrolled. BMI is a measure of body fat based on a person's height and weight. Dr. Stacy Brett Hauer at Ohio State University says BMI is not always an indication of how well a patient is responding to treatment for diabetes.
BMI is not really a fair or accurate representation of who should be getting therapy.
Brett Hauer says the criteria for the surgery is outdated.
The patient who doesn't get the operation, we know very well that their disease will progress, their lifespan will be shortened if they don't get effective treatment.
The American Medical Association classifies obesity as a complex, chronic disease that requires medical attention. If it's left untreated, Obesity can lead to heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. Brett Hauer advocates early treatment for both obesity and diabetes.
No one asks somebody with cancer or heart disease to just do it themselves. They have to participate in their care and do the right things, but there's, you know, also effective therapy being offered to those patients at the same time.
Since he had surgery to reduce the size of his stomach, Rogers has lost a significant amount of weight. His diabetes is also under control. He no longer needs oral medication and has gone from nearly 500 units of insulin per day to about 10.
It's changed my life so much, I would, you know, have anyone do it.
Diabetes is a global health issue. More than 400 million, 1 in 11 adults, have this disease. The World Health Organization estimates that number will rise significantly in the near future. If people with diabetes have bariatric surgery early on, their diabetes can be cured. For those who have had the disease for 10 years or more and need insulin shots, bariatric surgery won't reverse their diabetes, but Brett Hauer says it can greatly improve their health. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
After teaching high school math for years, Ginger Flesher Sonia decided she wanted a change. So she decided to open an adult funhouse of sorts known as an escape room, in which a group of people go into a special room and have to work as a team to solve a mystery within a set period of time to escape. But Flesher Sonia transformed the challenge into a Hollywood-themed escaped room. VOA's Maxim Moskalkov shares the fun.
Ginger Flesher Sonia owns this adult funhouse known as an escape room. The former teacher turned businesswoman has added a Hollywood twist. Her rooms resemble movie sets. Participants go into the staged room and must solve a series of puzzles within a period of time to escape.
When I was young, I had a very curious mind and was always trying to find puzzles and brain teasers that I could do. And I realized even the other day I had kind of an entrepreneurial spirit.
She tried an escape room with her husband for the first time while traveling in Europe several years ago. Flesher Sonia enjoyed the experience so much she decided to open her own, but with a bit more spark and glamour.
Many of the escape rooms that we went to were kind of dark and creepy and in basements, a little bit scary. I could tell that a woman did not have their hand in it. So what I decided to do was bring escape rooms out of the dark, get rid of the zombies, get rid of all the basement clandestine type things, and create a beautiful room that's scenically pleasing and on theme, and also have puzzles that were doable and related to the theme.
Today she owns 10 escape rooms in the Washington area. Themes include Curse of the Mummy, Ghostbusters, and Moriarty's Madness, among others.
This is my third time in an escape room.
Second
time for him. And we enjoyed it. The puzzles were good. They actually all meant something with the escape room itself. So it wasn't just random.
Any object in the room can turn out to be a key to solving a puzzle. Some clues can only be seen with the use of special tools. A game master in another room watches the players while the game is in progress and offers hints and tips if the players ask.
One thing that you end up finding in this room is just a small little laminate with a couple little symbols on there. And so the idea is that this room is primarily focused around communication. So you're usually finding information in one place and then finding another place to utilize it.
The escape room craze originated in Japan and has taken off in America. There are reportedly more than 2,000 escape rooms across the country, and Flesher Sonia plans to add a few more of her own. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online at VOA Asia Facebook and, of course, our website, voanews.com. You'll also find us on another Facebook site, VOA Burmese. We say hello to everyone listening in Myanmar. Thanks for joining us today. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Zainab Abdel-Rahman, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.